I'm so happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Jerry Sullivan Graham. She's a hydrogeologist at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and she is the Brackish Water Work Group Coordinator for the state of New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
So we are here to talk about water in New Mexico, and especially like non-traditional and alternative water resources. Now, we know that there's water in our rivers when there is water in our rivers, and it's fresh water and fish swim in it and we drink it and we irrigate with it and so on. And there's water underground in our aquifers, but it turns out that there's a lot of different things in our water, and there are a lot of different things in our underground area. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like there's space and a lot of things flow into that space under our feet. You're a hydrogeologist. Try to explain to us what we're looking at, what's going on underground.
Okay. Well, hydrogeology is a study of the subsurface and water that flows in the subsurface and other fluids and gases that exist in the subsurface. So the first thing we might think of is groundwater. We know that we have wells in New Mexico in many places, and that's a primary source of fresh water for us. And so hydrogeology is a study of that water and how much we can extract, what the quality of that water is, where it flows to and from, how old it is. Older water is water that's been down out of the contact of the atmosphere for a very long time. Younger water is more newly recharged from rainfall. So there's a continuum of water from our fresh surface water all the way through to very, very old water that's been deeply buried in the pore spaces of the rocks.
Now, what's the difference chemically between old water and new water?
Well, older water often is more saline, and so we'll talk about that a little more. It's been in contact with the salts and minerals that are in the rocks for a very long time, so there's been lots of opportunity for dissolution of the rocks into the water.
It's funny because I think when we non-hydrogeologists, which is basically virtually everybody on Earth, think about drilling a well or think about drilling for oil, we sort of think, oh, there's a big empty space with water in it, and we tap into that and pull it out. It's almost mm-hmm. like a big tank or a big lake or something. And there's a big oil reserve, and it's just sitting there and pure, but that's not really what it looks like.
Mm-mm, no. I think the best analogy would be, say you go to the beach and you have a bucket and you fill it with sand, right? You know, who hasn't done that? And then you know that you can take water and pour it into the sand. You won't overtop the bucket, but that water fits in between all the little spaces between those sand grains. And that's what we have underground in many cases. We have what is called a porous medium. It's like a sponge, and the pore spaces between those sand grains is where the water or the oil or gas exists.
And so when you pull it out, you have to have a technology wherein you're pulling out the liquid but not all the solids, mm-hmm. not all the sand or minerals or whatever it looks like.
Right. So when we drill a drinking water well, they'll put a pipe down it, they'll drill a hole, they'll put a pipe down into the ground, and they'll have something called a well screen, like a slotted pipe, and that holds back the sand or the rocks and lets the water come through. And of course you need a pump. So
let's talk about the state of New Mexico. What's going on under the ground? We know we've got water, and we have to be very careful about draining our aquifers, as you said, mm-hmm. more quickly than they recharge, because otherwise we got nothing left for our wells. We've got oil and gas. We also have brackish water. What do we know about that? I mean, even how well even do we know what we've got?
Well, we've done a lot of studies in New Mexico over the past 100 years on water and subsurface water. We also know a lot about our fresh surface water, our rivers and our streams. A lot of measurement occurs for those. We work with the federal government. The USGS does measurements. The state does measurements. So we have a lot of information, and it's really easy for people to see fresh surface water. They know what's happening. They can see the river running or not, depending on the year. They can see the lake filling up or not. That water chemically has very little salt in it. it's usually less than about 500 milligrams per liter. And just to give you an idea what a milligram is, it's about the amount I could put in the end of my fingernail. So that's a pretty typical number, 500 milligrams per liter or less, to define our fresh water, both above and below ground.
And so if you drink water like that, you're not even going to taste the salt, and it's not going to be bad for you?
No. Once you get water that is in the subsurface, that's been there a little bit longer or has been in contact with rocks and minerals a little longer, that water can be a little saltier. Then we get into what's called brackish water. And brackish water usually is defined as being about 1,000 to 10,000 milligrams per liter of salinity. Brackish water tends to be a little more dense because it has more salt in it, and so it often underlies fresh water in groundwater aquifers.
And so, I mean, underwater, if you have salty water and fresh water, they don't just totally mix.
Not all the time. A great example is, say you have an iceberg, and it's floating on the ocean, right, and it starts to melt. That fresh water tends to float on the surface. The salty water is more dense, and it stays below that.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens underground.
It does. It does. You may get some mixing depending on if you have a zone where it's flowing quickly, or maybe you have a well and you're pumping, you might see some mixing. And that's part of what hydrogeology does, is study that.
So why do we have brackish water under New Mexico?
Well, much of that water is very, very old. It's been in the basins in New Mexico for a very long time. It was recharged thousands to hundreds of thousands of years ago in some cases. Some of the water that is very deep is the remnants of old oceans that used to exist over the part of the western U.S. And so that water got mixed with the sediment and was buried sequentially and has just stayed down there.
Oh my goodness. So every once in a while somebody will find a fossil of a shell when they're out
yes.
walking, and underneath that is actually literally old ocean water.
Yes. in a very simplistic sense, yes.
Yeah.
Those rocks could contain old ocean water. It could get a little more complicated than that. You can have rocks that are uplifted via geologic forces, and those rocks may come in contact with the surface. Then you might get fresher water that percolates through them.
So under the ground, we've got this fresh water, we've got brackish water, we've got even saltier water than that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do we pump up out of the ground? We try to really just pump fresh water.
Yes. I mean, that's what people want, right? That's our lifeblood, is fresh water. And so most wells in the state are drilled into fresh water aquifers. And usually if they were drilling a well and they hit water that was salty, you'd stop, you'd back up, close off the hole, try something else, because nobody wanted to mess with salt water. Recently, though, what has been happening is we've seen a number of severe droughts in New Mexico, and that's reduced the levels of fresh water in many wells. There are places in the state where some water wells are running dry, and it's a real severe problem. So looking at these saltwater reservoirs as a possible resource is a new thing, and it's possible now due to technology and our understanding of where this water is.
So in a changing climate where the southwestern United States becomes hotter and drier and we don't perhaps use our water very efficiently or for the right things, we want to have this other water resource. But let's say you pump salty or brackish water out of the ground. What do you then do with it? I mean, you have to purify it.
Yes, and that's where, you know, most folks have heard of desalination. Reverse osmosis is something that people have heard of, and that uses membranes. You force the water through the membrane to separate the water from the salt. It's very energy intensive, unfortunately. It's gotten more efficient in recent years, but it's still about twice as much cost to treat salty water as it is to use fresh water.
So when you do treat salty water, what then happens to the salt and the minerals and all the stuff that you take out of the water?
Well, if you are lucky enough to live near an ocean, then you probably dump it back in the ocean. However, we don't have a coastline, so we have to do other things. There's a couple of options in New Mexico. One is to reinject it reinject the salty water back into a deeper formation.
Wait, I thought you'd taken out the water.
Well, this is like a layer cake. So you have fresh water closer to the surface, maybe a little saltier water farther down, maybe 1,000, 2,000 feet down. And then even deeper, you may have water that's even saltier than what you've just separated. So it's legal to do that with the appropriate well construction and permits to create a reinjection well. The other thing you can do is you can take that concentrate reject, is what it's called, and you can put it in evaporation ponds. Fortunately, we have a very high evaporation rate here, and it allows us to dispose of water that way.
But, okay, please forgive me, but I'm thinking you take 1,000 gallons of salty water out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Some number less than 1,000 gallons of that is pure water, and then what you have left, in theory, is a bunch of crumbly solid minerals.
Not quite. Usually when you use a reverse osmosis system or something similar, your recovery rate for fresh water, the amount that you would be able to separate out economically, is about 50%. So you'd end up with 500 gallons of fresh and 500 gallons of saltier water.
Ah, I see. So it's inefficient in a number of ways.
Yes, yes.
Very interesting. We're talking to Jerry Sullivan Graham, hydrogeologist at Los Alamos National Laboratory, about water. Now, I mean, you are the head of the brackish water work group for the state of New Mexico. What are you looking at? What are you thinking about?
Well, this is a part of the governor's drought task force, and she had asked a number of different folks to form different committees. One of them is Brackish Water Work Group, one is Produced Water Working Group, to look at different kinds of water resources that could be used in a time of drought. We have many recurring droughts in New Mexico. Obviously this year it's not a drought per se. However, we still have a lot of groundwater shortages. This is one year amongst many. We have a really good year this year, and previous years have not been very good for about 4 or 5 years. So we need to do some advanced planning to look at different kinds of resources that we could bring to bear. Recycling water is one. Reducing our use of fresh water, being more efficient with our fresh water, is another way to create a new resource in a way. And to look at brackish water and produced water as possible replacements for fresh water where feasible.
Is there anything you can do with brackish water without purifying it? Does it have any other function?
Yes. Well, one thing you can do is you can blend it with fresher water and use it for purposes where you don't need it to be perfect. Livestock can drink water that's a little bit saltier than we can. We don't tolerate salt as well as they do. You can use it sometimes for agriculture for more salt-tolerant crops. And then you can use it in industry. A really good example is the potash mines in southern New Mexico that can use salty water for solution mining. And it's actually a better option for them because they can recover more potash via salty water than they can if they used fresh water.
Interesting. Can you use it in power plants to boil water to make electricity?
It's difficult. Power plants for their cooling processes need very pure water. So it would require pretreatment in that case. There might be some technologies that we could develop farther down the line that would be more salt tolerant, corrosion resistant. And so that's where research at the labs and various research institutions could provide better technology to help us in the future.
Yeah, actually, when I think about what used to happen to my car when I lived in the northeastern United States and they salted the roads,
mm-hmm.
Your car was half gone by the end of the winter if you didn't take care of it.
Corrosion is a real problem.
Yeah. Now, you used the term produced water. What does that mean?
Okay, so that's another kind of potential alternative resource that is out there, and people are very curious about it. Produced water is water that coexists with oil and gas in oil and gas reservoirs in the subsurface.
So this is an interesting point. I think it's an important one to really get across. in that subsurface, all the area under the ground, you've got this porous material. It's like, as you said, sand in a bucket or glass beads in a jar. And in between those grains or those pieces of solid material, things flow. And it turns out not only water, whether it be salty water, brackish water, fresh water, is flowing around under the ground. You've got oil and gas, but they're not separate.
Right.
So the oil industry, oil and water are totally mixed when you drill for oil.
Yes. It's not something most people are aware of, but when you remove a barrel of oil from the ground via an oil and gas well, you often get up to 10 barrels of water. So it's almost 10 times as much water as oil in the ground.
And that's just how it is downstairs in nature.
Yes.
And so what do they do with that water?
Well, the normal process has been to separate it from the oil and then reinject it. And that is a well-understood, permitted process. It's been done for 100 years, as long as we've been bringing out oil and gas. And as soon as they realized that they were also going to get a lot of water with it, that was a waste product. And so they had to come up with a way to deal with that. They reinject it. Sometimes they can use it to help flood a reservoir to remove a little more oil. And so they'll move it through a reservoir deliberately by pumping to bring more oil out. But generally that water is recirculated through a system on the surface and then taken to an injection well and put back down into the oil and gas reservoir where it came from.
Now, when you do that, is that, I mean, help us understand, like, you've got all this stuff floating around or existing underground, and when you take it out, are you creating a kind of like vacuum where, you know, does it make the earth less stable if you don't put that liquid back in?
Mm-hmm. It can. It sometimes depends on depth. The deeper you go, the more stable the earth is in many cases. But if you pull fluid out of a pore space, you could collapse that pore space. So that's one reason when we're looking at brackish water recovery and use, we have to be very careful that we don't pull too much of it out of the ground. Same is true even for fresh water. If you pull too much, you could collapse your pore spaces. You may not be able to recover that pore space ultimately.
So when you talk about using produced water instead of reinjecting it, what's the thought process? Where are you going with that?
Well, the first and most logical way to reuse produced water is to keep it within the oil and gas industry. They are well-versed in handling this water already, if only for disposal. However, recent thinking in the last 10 years has been, we're producing oil and gas in places where there's a lot of drought. We can't get a hold of fresh water as easily as we used to. Communities prefer to keep it for themselves. The farmers prefer to keep it for themselves if there's a shortage. So if they can take the produced water and reuse it within the oil and gas drilling process, that provides them a very reliable supply. They don't have to buy fresh water, and they can continue to reuse it over and over.
So it wouldn't be like this water would go out into the community and be purified and drunk by citizens.
You know, you can purify anything if you put enough money into it, but generally this would be pretty expensive to purify. There is research going on to try to do this economically. That's a key word, is economically, because it can be very expensive. There are some kinds of produced water that are probably going to be easier to use right off the bat. For example, water that comes out of coal bed methane resource beds in places like Wyoming can be very fresh water. So the desalination piece is not so hard. It's not so expensive.
It's tricky business because when we talk about these industries, I mean, there's a very, very strong argument for leaving as much oil and gas in the ground as is humanly possible because these are fossil fuels, and the more we burn them, the more we change our climate, the more hot and dry New Mexico is. The economic implications of a hotter and drier future are absolutely devastating in the Southwest.
Yes.
So is there an argument for leaving water in the ground?
I think we need to be very judicious about how we manage all forms of groundwater, both fresh, brackish. It's a very precious resource. I will say New Mexico has a pretty good population, and that we have a good feeling for what drought really means and the stress that it can induce. So anytime that you have fresh water at the surface and you can reuse it efficiently, that's your first best option. Be efficient, do it right. If you have to withdraw groundwater, know what you're doing. Know what the water levels are. Understand that when you withdraw water out of your under your piece of property, you may be affecting your neighbor, your neighbor's neighbor. It's a continuum underground in many cases. So understanding that it's a shared resource is very, very important. This is true both for fresh and brackish water. It's kind of like a bank account. You know, I think of fresh water as being sort of our checking account. You can kind of see readily what's available. You get a paycheck every so often. It rains every so often. You know what you have in the lake or the river. You know, you can withdraw it, and you know pretty easily and pretty quickly what you've got. Groundwater is like your savings account, and you know, maybe you don't check that quite so much. And what if somebody, you know, steals your identity and starts taking water out and you don't know about it? It's not real obvious right away because the water flows more slowly. It's underground. It's harder to see. It's harder to visualize. So if we take our groundwater and think of it in terms of a very precious bank account and understand what the levels are, understand what the recharger is, you know, understand where it flows, if we have a good understanding of it, then we can manage it well.
What kind of research are you doing? I mean, there's a lot that's still not known about about these water resources that we have. What are you doing, and what would you like to see in the future?
Well, there's a really big gap in our knowledge of brackish and saline water resources. There's a lot of numbers that float around. People say that, oh, there's trillions of gallons in the subsurface in New Mexico. We should use this. But we really don't have a good handle on how much is there. And we also don't know all the places where it may be interconnected with our fresh water. If you pump brackish water, you're probably pumping from a deeper zone. And you don't want to draw fresh water down into that zone, certainly.
Oh, my God.
Now,
you could totally contaminate your fresh water by pumping brackish water that's underneath it, creating a vacuum so that fresh water, through the force of gravity or whatever, flows down.
Yes.
You could. And then you're losing your... Okay.
You could. That's not always the case in all basins. We do have, fortunately, something called confining zones. So you can imagine a basin in New Mexico like a bowl. So you have mountains on either side, like we have the mountains near Los Alamos on one side and the mountains near Santa Fe on the other side. And in between is a layer cake of sediments in between. Some of those sediments are more permeable, like sandstones or sand formations, and sometimes they're clays. And so that can prevent that interconnection.
The clay.
Yes. And so in some cases, you have a good dividing zone, an aquiclude or an aquitard is the technical term, that will keep those two from mixing. But again, we need to know where those are, we need to define them clearly, and we need to understand what's above and below them.
And so that basically means going out in the field and drilling thin, deep holes kind of thing?
Monitoring wells, test wells. It's also important to do good geologic mapping. Pumping tests are another thing that can be done to understand the flow properties in an aquifer. We have a lot of studies that have been done over the years in New Mexico, but many of them are on paper. They were very well-done studies, but getting that information out of the paper and into databases that we can use electronically for future data analysis is very important. We're trying to do that now, but it's really limited in our ability. We don't have a lot of funding. The data is scattered over many, many institutions, and so bringing that all together is something we're trying to do through the Brackish Water Work Group.
Interesting. So some of your work is out in the field, but then a lot of it is ideally interconnected, internet-based or digitally based research.
Right. We're working with the Bureau of Geology in Socorro to build sort of a comprehensive database throughout New Mexico for all of the different types of water resources that we have. I'll note that brackish water is very poorly characterized because if people were drilling wells and they got to salty water, what did they do? They stopped. So they didn't keep going to understand how thick that interval was, what the chemistry was. They didn't necessarily take a sample. They just went, this is salty water. We don't care.
Right.
Our view has changed now, and so now we're more interested. And so we're looking for data. We're trying to mine the old reports and trying to bring in information from oil and gas and just any source that we can find that's relevant. We're going to try and bring it together.
It's always good to have that reminder that a study is only as good as its accessibility after it's done.
Absolutely. We want to make this as accessible to people as we can. This is a public resource, a public piece of information that we'd like to have as many folks as possible access and use.
What institutions around the state are working on this?
Well, our major universities, UNM, NMSU, and New Mexico Tech all have research programs in water and water resources. There's research into geothermal waters. That's also a type of water that can be brackish. That's of interest.
Geothermal water meaning volcanically hot.
Yes.
Heated water under the ground.
Yes.
Where do we have that in this state?
Oh, boy. There's a number of places. The Jemez is one place. Southern New Mexico are other places down the Central Mountain Chain. It's quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, I guess I really just have to look at hot spring spas to find out.
There you go.
So what would you like to see going forward, both in terms of research and in terms of public consciousness on how to envision our water future?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are going to need to happen. It'd be nice to have some more investment for research. As a research scientist, I'm always excited when we get a chance to look at things more thoroughly. I think there's a lot to be gained by getting our databases together, but we also need to go out in the field and add data where we don't have information. There's a lot of gaps, so we want to fill data gaps. I think there's also a lot to be gained in having state institutions talking to each other. The state engineer mostly works with quantity. NMED works with quality.
NMED being the New Mexico Environment Department.
Yes. And then we have the Bureau of Geology and Mineral Resources, so they gather a lot of information. So then we have the universities, of course, and the labs. And so all of these entities gather a lot of data. Bringing all that together and doing a coherent analysis would be a really terrific thing to do to understand our brackish resources. We also need to look at technology and the costs of technology and how we might best apply it to desalinate. Another thing that we would need to look at is where do we need the water the most? What communities really would benefit from having brackish water as a resource, for example? Would they benefit more from recycling their wastewater? Cloudcroft is getting ready to recycle their wastewater as an alternative to bringing in a new freshwater resource. Some communities just don't have fresh water to go get anymore. So we need to think about all these different types of resources as a whole and look at what's the best option for a given location.
If people who are listening today are interested in this subject and want to follow up, what should they do?
Well, I'd be glad to talk to them more, or they can email me. My state email is Jerry, J-E-R-I, dot Sullivan Graham, all one word, at state.nm.us.
And if anybody missed that, they can write to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. Jerry Sullivan Graham is a hydrogeologist at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and she's Brackish Water Workgroup Coordinator for the state of New Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.